Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Lemon Sour Podcast with me, Gary Jones. I hope you've all had a fantastic time this week. I have got possibly the most deep interview I've done yet. This week I talked to Jenny Critchlow, who serves the shamanic healer and acupuncturist, and we go deep. We talk about perception, we talk about reality, we talk about inner self, and we discuss. During the interview, I honestly discovered a lot about myself, and I hope you do too. So split into two parts, we're going to be talking about her background and how she got into it, plus all this other cool stuff, and also then her golden nugget at the end. So let's get cracking with part one, and let's take it away with this interview. So here's Jenny for part one. I'm joined now with Jenny Critchlow, and we're going to be talking about loads of different things, but for the people who don't know you, Jenny, can you describe what you do and where you're based at the moment?
Well, in a nutshell, I'm an acupuncturist and shamanic healer.
Cool.
They're my main titles. I run a workshop space, so I see private patients for what I term as a group term would be called vibrational healing.
Okay.
And in the workshop space, I teach different types of, well, I call them journeys that you can go on. So one of the main things that I teach is a thing called shamanic dreaming. I teach a beginners and an intermediate. And shamanism and shamanic dreaming is a way of entering other realities and bringing information back. And while it's based on a belief system in a sense, and there are many different traditions that practice a form of shamanic healing or shamanic dreaming, including the Aborigines. A lot of people associate it mainly with North American Indians, but most cultures have a form of shamanism. And the way I teach it is to try and bring it into a really practical realm. So while there's some lovely ceremony and there's some lovely teachings around it all, it's actually a really useful tool, and so I teach it in a really practical way. So it doesn't ask you to believe in anything, it gives you a structure, a beginner structure, to go off and find your own flavour.
I like that. So you're actually generating the ideas yourself.
Absolutely. Well, you're going into your subconscious, so it's a way you, I as the person that facilitates the dreaming use a drum, and that I use the drum as almost like directions on the street. This is where you're going, this is how long you're going there for, and this is when you're coming back, and you do the dreaming. So the very first journey I ever teach is how to meet your what's called your power animal. And your power animal, theoretically in shamanic belief system, is an animal, or the energy of an animal that's agreed to work with you for your life. You can choose to believe that that's true literally, or you can choose to believe that in more esoteric sense. You can choose to believe whatever you like. The fact remains is that using the tools to go into the dream time allows you to access your subconscious and allow it to speak to you in whatever way it does.
And just as a kind of layman in this kind of subject, why is that important? So what does the subconscious give you?
It gives you answers and directions that our normal heads find difficult. So one of the things I teach with a colleague called Emma Servant is meditation and mindfulness.
Got you.
But really what we teach within that beginner's framework isn't just the skill of meditation, it's the why. And this is where shamanic worlds meet every other world.
Yeah.
Is that, including this world, is that one of the reasons mindfulness, especially as a word, because it takes away all the spirituality associated with meditation.
Yeah.
One of the reasons it's so popular is because most of our suffering is in our head. Our human conscious minds are quite literally insane. They are undisciplined. They are they make messes. They race around in our heads all day, telling us things that aren't true. Making us believe you can be doing the ironing and fall out with five different people by the time you've finished. It is insane, and everybody's doing it. Everybody's mind is doing it. And we look at it through the concept of an ego, not in the way that we would look at a Western ego, but the ego is an, if you can perceive it as an entity, it's an easier thing to understand. But the human ego seeks to feel superior at every moment of every day. It seeks to superior, yes, to be the best. But because we can't be the best at every moment of every day, it seeks to feel better. And because we can't feel better than at every moment of every day.
Yeah.
What we simply do is our ego allows itself to put other egos down.
Wow.
So we don't actually feel any better, we just feel better than.
Okay.
And our mind constantly finds ways to do that. And it has to find ways to do that because that's how it survives.
That sounds exhausting.
Well, aren't you? Isn't everybody absolutely... I make a living from people being exhausted.
It's true.
It is. Living in the now, the ego dies to the now. It cannot exist in the now.
Yeah.
Now is absolutely nothing. What is going on now? So the only thing that you know for a fact that is real right now,
yeah,
in your perception, is that I'm sitting here.
Yes.
You've got something recording in your hand.
Yeah.
There's a coffee there. Everything else is in your head.
Okay.
Everything else is in your past. The only reason you know how to sit on that chair is because you've learnt what chair does. Otherwise, you'd be standing by it, wondering what this chair did.
True.
I have a workshop space, I think. How do I know? Am I in front of it? No. Has it burned down right now? Could have done.
But you don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, absolutely.
So your obsession, because you're not there, is your last memory from that.
Absolutely. So it's in the past.
Okay.
Now is now.
I got you.
Got it?
Yeah.
So we bring in stories from the past, and they're stories. They're always flawed. They always make us superior. So either we win in the story,
yeah,
or what the ego loves more than anything else in the world is superior victim.
Okay.
So we become the victim of the story because we win.
Yeah.
If you're the victim of the peace, people don't argue. If you're the victim of the peace, people leave you alone. Your ego wins.
Okay.
And so our past stories allow us to be right and or victim.
Got you. Okay.
You live in the now, you can't have any of that. You're just sitting on a chair.
Yeah.
You're either any human being is either sitting, standing, or lying down. No matter how much money you've got, how little money you've got, or how well you are, or how ill you are, you're either sitting, standing, or lying down, and you're okay.
Okay.
So our ego either keeps us in the past.
Yeah.
Or it projects into the future. It'll do anything to keep us from now.
Okay.
And so what the human ego, what we do is we play the when game. When I have this, when I am this, when I weigh this, when I look like this, when I get this, when I own this, when I have this much money, when I say this, when I win this.
Yeah.
The human ego constantly lets us know that there's a future moment that is better than now.
Got you. Okay.
So when I will be able to, when I, a lot of people do, when I win the lottery,
mm-hmm,
I will. Most women, including me, play when I am thinner, I will.
Okay.
A lot of men play when I earn, I will.
Yeah.
It's constantly a march towards a future moment that doesn't exist.
So that's the ego pushing you forward.
It pushes you forward, but it doesn't exist. It's
no.
a moment that we think we will feel better in.
Yeah.
But that's a future moment, it doesn't exist.
So how do you counteract that?
You live here and now.
Okay.
Which is what meditation is about. And it's what even shamanic dreaming is about. It's about in this now moment, mm-hmm, what can I perceive?
So almost what you can do is you can help people reset their minds so they live in the now.
Yes. And to understand that our suffering is in our head,
okay,
and in our story.
Wow. So that's very powerful. Very
yes.
powerful. Have you always done this, or have you done other things in the past?
I've only ever been in this field of work, but this teaching has come through really in the last 4 or 5 years and is still developing.
Yeah.
But yes, you've got it really right there, is that it is powerful and it is transformative, but it's intensely personal, and that's the best thing about it, is that I'm not doing anything, you're doing it.
Yeah.
You learn it. You practice the skills and you get better at it.
You're the guide to facilitate it.
Facilitate would be great, yes. But I'm not doing anything anyone else couldn't do.
No.
I think that's really important, because again, that does the whole superior ego thing.
Is that
underneath it, even in a quantum sense, if you ask any quantum physicist, where there is a unified field of existence. So when we say spiritually, if you like, we are all one, actually it's provable now in a lab that we are actually indistinguishable in an energetic form from each other. I won't go into quantum here, but
let's not go into quantum. That's a bit too
I'll do
high
that next
ground
time.
Too right. But how did you find this? How did you get into this field?
Well, my background is Chinese medicine.
Okay.
So when I did my degree when I was younger in Chinese medicine and acupuncture.
Okay.
Before that, I'd had a couple of awakening moments. I was 14 in Massachusetts, and with my parents, I can't remember why, visiting some people.
Mm.
And it's a very shamanic area, and I didn't know. And I felt like I'd come home. So there were little bits like that had happened for me through my life. I did a degree in Chinese medicine.
Okay.
Emerged from university and was an acupuncturist. Had heard this word shaman throughout these little bits of my life.
Yeah.
But didn't know anything. There wasn't really an internet to speak of in those days or email to speak of in those days. So it was really just around in the ether. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was at work one day between patients and meditating and getting frustrated, which is what not what meditators are meant to do at all. But I just remember saying, I know what you want me to do. I don't know how to do it. I don't know where even to go with this. And I stomped a little bit down the stairs and went to make a cup of tea in this clinic I was working in. And I opened up one of the little magazines they had there, and there was a tiny little advert saying shamanic practitioners, 2 years, call. And I called the number, sent off my checks. And then I spent the next 2 years travelling to and from, I was living in London at the time, travelling to and from Glastonbury, sitting in shamanic apprenticeship. And the end of 2 years, then I emerged as a shaman, if you want to call it that, or a shamanic practitioner.
Yeah.
And then I started work like that.
Okay.
And then over the period of my 20s, I did all sort of the usual things that you would do in that field. So I teach Reiki, I did all the Reiki levels, and massage, and the things that would bring you really into this field and have a lot of skills in.
I was going to say, this is quite refreshing to hear someone talk with your background, because there's a lot of the people who I speak to, just in general terms, have had massive turning points or turning life moments in their life where they've gone, I need to change something, so therefore I'm going to be doing this. They'll change their profession, their lifestyle, whatever it would be. But by the sounds of it, you've had little light bulb moments all the way through your life, but you've always had the same common why, you've always had the same kind of common theme going through it. It's just in different sections.
Possibly, yes. What I think you picked up on really beautifully there is that for most people it takes a huge moment for them to have to change their lives.
Yes.
And this is one of my passions, is that if you think about what we talked about earlier about being the victim of the piece.
Yes.
As a society, we don't allow people to change very easily. If you're sitting across from someone and they want to downsize, leave their job, turn everything around, there's an enormous amount of struggle in that for them, wanting acceptance of it, people's opinions of it, wondering whether they pay for their children's schooling, whether the judgment of you taking them out of their schooling or moving areas, all those kind of things. Get very ill or have a major crisis that other people can see, you win. Everyone agrees. So everyone goes, well, of course she's left her job, of course she's turned, well, you know what, well, you know what happened, well, now she's living her life like this, and everybody applauds. And you don't have to get there to change.
No.
But we do in this society in that sense, because we want the permission of other people to change our lives.
Okay.
Most of us know how we would like our lives to change, but we're scared to do it. And a lot of the reason we're scared to do it is the story we tell about what other people will think.
Okay.
And in turn, therefore, because we always turn it around on ourselves, what I think, what do I think of what I want to do?
Yeah.
Get sick or have a crisis, have something terrible happen, and we're allowed the permission to do the things we always wanted to do.
Because you're not in control of it, so therefore...
Because the fear is gone. You've got the reason. Well, you can't beat that. I'm really poorly. Of course I'm going to live like this.
Yeah.
And no one can better that. So we don't have to challenge that in ourselves.
Okay.
Part of this teaching, part of my absolute passion, is that we don't have to get that bad to make the changes.
No.
Ever. But it's your choice. And so it's learning about that. It's learning about what drives us, what fear drives us, the story that drives us. I mean, one of the best ways you can ever look at your story is to fact check yourself. So you say, I can't leave my job because of the children. Okay, so you fact check, you're only allowed a yes or a no. The minute you go out of yes or no, you go into justification. So I can't leave my job because of the children. Is that true?
Probably not.
You get a yes or a no.
Yeah, no.
There we go. It's not that the answer is no, but normally the answer is no. It's a story we tell to hold ourselves where we are.
So that's a nice little golden nugget just there.
Yeah, it's really useful. It's really, yes and no is really powerful.
Mm.
Really powerful. If you can give yourself the sentence.
Yeah.
Or come and see me for a treatment and I'll give it to you.
I was going to say, in terms of, I think picking up on one point you just said, about choice. If they're not willing or not aware they can make the choice or need to make the choice, would you be able to help them still?
I'll help anyone that comes to the door, absolutely, without a doubt. You come to the door for a reason.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. So I advertise and obviously promote the teaching and the workshop, but the one-on-one work I do, I don't. Mm-hmm. So it's all word of mouth, and my perception is you make it there because you're ready to come.
Got you.
Okay. And if you're not, you don't.
And so in this scenario, I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
That, let's say, the other half, one, and this could be either male or female, says to the other partner, you need to change this, so therefore, and they keep going on and on about it. So that said, a person comes to you and says, well, my other half wants me to change this. They're not willing to change, potentially. Would you still be able to help them in that scenario?
Well, there's two things going on there. Okay. One is it's the other half's opinion that this person needs to change.
Yes.
So the person I really like to get my hands on would be the other half.
Okay.
Because once you say, you need to behave differently so that I can feel better, you give someone else a job.
Yeah.
You make everyone else responsible for your happiness and your peace.
Okay.
Do you say, I really hate the way you brush your hair? It's just really innocuous. Change it, it bugs me, I don't like it. Can you change it?
Yeah.
That gives not only that person a job, mm-hmm, for maintaining your peace and happiness, change the way you brush your hair.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow you any skill at all.
No.
That your suffering is in your head. Is it really the hairbrushing that is making you suffer? Yes or no?
Okay.
Normally, no. And we look at what we do is we make everyone else responsible for our happiness, for our peace. And that's impossible. There are 7 billion people on the planet and we can't control them all.
No.
You cannot control anybody.
No.
You can make them make marriage vows. You can make them promise. You can make them swear. You can make them put money down. You still cannot control anybody.
No.
You can only be in charge of your own attitude.
So therefore, you look at her or him.
Well, let's say
this
is the person, the partner's coming in, so that's the person that's sitting opposite me.
Yes.
When you're sitting opposite me, it's about how we make it okay for you.
Okay.
So we probably really wouldn't look at what the partner wanted this person to do at all. We would look at that person's life and where they are.
Okay.
We would probably get to the point, but it's organic, so I don't know, and I'm certainly not controlling it. There may be a point where we look at why they agree that their partner's opinion is the right one.
True.
But I don't know that because it has to come in the moment and in the
reason, now. The reason I mention that and use that scenario is because speaking to other professionals in different fields, they wouldn't, because that person doesn't really believe it in themselves.
Right.
And that's why I asked that question, to find out. Mm. But you've put an interest in, it's basically a mindset shift.
It's nothing to do with changing anybody else, because you can't.
No.
If it was, we'd all do it. That would be really easy. It's not even about changing yourself.
Mm.
It's normally about changing your story. So if you can find a story that you're more comfortable with, we can work it. But what we do is we look at where that person is now, and we question their story. It's really simple. Really simple.
Well, in terms of story, let's finish this part with this one. However, on part two, we'll talk a little bit more about your profession, your field, and some insights about that. Is that okay?
Perfect.
Cool.
Everyone knows that business owners and networkers have to make presentations. But even for these people, that can cause sickness and sleepless nights. If the words booming heart rate, anxiety, dread describe your emotions as your turn to speak approaches, then contact me at Ernie Said, that's www.erniesaid.info, and we will make those words comfortable, confident and inspiring. Ernie Said.
Let's rejoin me and Jenny for part two of this brilliant interview. We're back now for part two, and with your field and your occupation, is there kind of some common misconceptions about what people believe is true about it?
I think there are the obvious ones that many people think, because there's a lot of things said that isn't quantifiable. I think if you want to go and look at perception, then do angels exist? I don't know personally. Someone else might know for a fact. I don't know. So maybe there's that.
Yeah.
I think the most important important one to talk about here, because it really comes into the work, is that most people think that people in this field know something that they don't. Mm. They're either psychic, or they've got a special gift, or the person walks into the room and suddenly we know all their secrets. You know, we all have secrets, and we all have things we think everybody might know about us. Mm. Or we all have a secret that we fear, a base secret that we fear other people finding out, whether it's an obvious one, like we drink too much, or not an obvious one, like secretly we think we're really ugly, or something like that.
Yeah.
And people tend to think that people in my profession know this immediately, and it isn't true. And what happens is either people can play on that, mm-hmm. and it's very, very easy to say things like, okay, so I'm a woman in my 40s with kids, and I would be an easy target for, oh, well, I really feel that it's time for you to take time for you. You know, really break out of your mould, and it's time for you to live your own life. And for most women my age, that would sound profound and real. But actually, it's pretty across the board, mm. you know, when you've got kids of a certain age and a certain life, and we're working and busy. And they're very easy things to say to people. So it would be that, is that if anyone ever implies that they know stuff that you don't, and it puts you in that inferior position,
yeah.
it doesn't empower you in any way, shape or form
no.
to live the life and go forward and live the life that you would like to live, because surely someone else has all the answers for you.
And then they've got the control you have.
Yes, it's so not conscious, it's not a bad thing. No one's. No. I've never met anyone with bad intentions.
No.
But the whole point is that the person that knows is you. Mm-hmm. The person with the answers is you. Shamanic dreaming gives you your answers. Meditation gives you your answers. Mm-hmm. Self-inquiry gives you your answers. Understanding the ego and how it works gives you your answers. Yes. They can be facilitated. So my job is to facilitate you finding what is right for you mm-hmm. and what it is you want yeah. and how to get it without harm. My biggest lesson is it's loving kindness to everybody, but loving and kind to yourself first. The Ooh. Heart pumps blood to itself first. For a reason.
Yeah.
It would be a nutty, insane heart if it deprived itself of blood
yeah.
in pursuit of the rest of the body thriving. That's crackers.
Yeah.
It's insane. Sense. And it's true for us. It's that if you want to give to yourself first.
Yeah.
And conversely, what you think the world is withholding from you, give to the world. You know, okay. people say, I just don't feel appreciated in my job. Okay, well, let's turn it around. Do you appreciate your job? Well, no, because they don't appreciate me. Okay, well, have you ever tried appreciating it? Well, no, because everyone's very horrible. Okay, well, what about if we just give it a try?
Yeah.
And things start to turn around because you turn around.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so the misconception in this job is that someone has special gifts. And while, like in any profession, there are people that are better at it than others, because that's just the general nature of humankind, mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter. You find the one for you,
yeah.
and you find the one, the person for you, that allows you to be the best you can be without it being about what they can tell you.
Makes sense.
The answers are in you.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that people buy people straight away. So therefore, if you don't engage with someone, you're not going to either be able to get on with them, you're not going to be able to talk to them, you're not going to be able to engage with them in whatever shape or form that will be. So I'm a big believer in that. And the perception of what's happening, yeah, that's massively important as well. Now, I believe you do workshops as well to help people with this, is
yes.
that right?
Oh, that is, yes, absolutely. So weekdays I work one-on-one.
Okay.
So I teach evenings and some weekends. One of the main things I teach is shamanic dreaming,
yeah.
because that's my first love. I teach a beginners and an intermediate shamanic dreaming, and the beginners focuses on the skills you use to do this mm-hmm. and how that works. I also teach a little bit of ceremony because it's beautiful, but
okay.
you don't have to believe in anything. It's
no.
just this is a lovely way to start. Mm-hmm. And in intermediate we do a few more advanced things, so it takes a little bit of leaping into the unknown for you to do the intermediate, because it involves things like distance journeying and ways of working with other people who aren't in the room.
True.
So it's a little bit more advanced.
And would you say that you need to go for the beginners to start off
oh, yes,
and then
absolutely.
Move into the intermediate afterwards?
Yes, without a doubt. Because
yeah.
we all teach differently. And
right,
so
yeah.
The basics I teach might be different to the basics someone else might teach.
Oh, okay.
But we can always have a chat. I also teach meditation. I
yeah.
teach this with a colleague called Emma Servant, who is just an awesome human being. Every human being is awesome, but she's my awesome human being. And it's we teach a beginner's meditation and an intermediate meditation, but mainly yeah. beginners at the moment. And okay. one of the things we've worked very, very hard on is this being a true beginner's. So when I did my meditation teacher training, mm-hmm. it was wonderful. The man I learned with was lived in the Zen monasteries in Japan for many years. He was okay. an English guy. And he was inspirational, phenomenal, and brilliant. I couldn't rate him highly enough.
No.
But the teaching structure for beginners began with asking each person in the class to dedicate 30 minutes a day to a silent sit over okay. the 8 weeks of the course, or please don't do the course. And I remember thinking, okay, I don't know whether for me that would, when I was beginning to meditate, I would have been able to do that. So okay. I either would have had to lie or not do the course.
Yeah.
Because 30 minutes a day, when you're working and you've got kids or not, when our lives are how they are, that's a big time commitment. Yeah. And 30 minutes silent sit without much practice is a little bit of a dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum. What's my brain meant to be doing? Is this now? Oh my God, was that now? Am I meant to be doing that?
I've tried to do meditation in bits throughout my life. 30 minutes is, I can never get to that.
There you go. Perfect.
I can never get to that.
Then come and do the beginners.
but you'd always kind of start with a couple of minutes, or I think the maximum I got was 10. And that mm-hmm. was the longest period I've done.
Well, 10's good.
To say 30 minutes straight off that with.
Well, it's also understanding that in the moment that is now, there is no time. So one conscious in and out breath is a meditation. That's it. Because time is a construct, is a human construct. Okay. So what we teach in the beginners, we build the silent sit over 6 weeks. So we go from 3 minutes in the first session. Okay. And by the end of the session, it's 15 minutes. In fact, the last of a beginner's meditation is coming up on Monday night. Yeah. And it's a 15-minute sit. But we add 2.5 minutes okay. every time.
Yeah.
So we build and build. Emma teaches especially, she's amazing at this, she teaches them breathing techniques. So you're given something to bring you into the now using the breath, okay. rather than just having to sit there and not think. But we also cover a topic each week, and each topic builds, so that you can start to understand intellectually, rather than just experientially, why we do it and what it means. So a lot of what we've covered about the ego and the now, about we cover a thing called the emotion code, so that's feelings and how that makes us feel, mm-hmm. about how we interact with other people.
Yeah.
And then we use the breathing as a way of dealing with that, and the silent sit builds, and hopefully by the end of 6 weeks, you have some skills that you could decide to take forward or not.
Okay.
But there isn't any part where you have to do anything. No. It's an introduction into something that could be really transformative. Mm. Well, and hopefully the 6 weeks in and of themselves are transformative. And you move from there and take it wherever you want to go.
Okay.
And that really is how that began, is that we wanted something that really allowed everybody to sample and experience every level of it
yeah.
without feeling like it was something else to fail at.
No, and I like the way that you've constructed that, because it does give people the freedom to be able to do it.
Yes.
And based on what you've done in the past, it makes sense.
Yes.
That makes complete sense.
There's no point setting everybody up for something else to feel rubbish about. Everyone tends to feel rubbish anyway.
Yeah, so you're doing something positive, which is going to help them. Mm-hmm. But they're going to gather the idea. It's great.
If they want to do it.
Yeah.
And there's no test. You get homework that you don't have to do. It's never happened before.
I love it.
We begin each session. Well, if you did the homework, how did it go? And if not, if you had a nice week.
Yeah.
And we start like that.
Oh, cool. I like that. And where are these workshops again for people?
So I have a small workshop space. I'm very, very lucky. In Claverdon, which is a village between Warwick and Henley and Arden. It's mm-hmm. just along the main road. And I work from there.
Brilliant. So I'm guessing there's ample parking. You can come along.
There's ample parking. You can come along. I have a Facebook page, which is The Annex at Barnmore House. And I have a website, which is jennycritchlow.com.
Perfect. Now, at this point in the interview, I always love to ask everyone what their one golden piece of advice will be. Call it a golden nugget, which, if they were going to depart with just one lesson, there's been loads in here, massively loads of golden nuggets, but what would your one golden nugget be?
You're asking me to be succinct. I'm not so good at that one. Maybe it should be that, be succinct.
There you go.
It really would be, if money was no object
yeah.
and I wasn't afraid, what would I do?
That's powerful.
give it a go. The other thing I say a lot is, don't believe any of this. It's not a belief system. Don't believe a thing. Go and live it and watch and observe what is real for you.
Yeah.
So what if money was no object and I wasn't afraid? What would I do?
Perfect. Absolutely. Wow. I like that. Very good. So if people, you've already alluded to the website and how to get to it. Have you got an email address or social media that people can follow you on?
Facebook is The Annex of Barmore House. I am on Twitter. It's The Annex One. I'm a real Twitter virgin. There's about three tweets on there, but you can go and have a look. Go and follow and I'll give it a
Facebook
good go.
So is Facebook your kind of preferred way of doing it?
Yes, I have a mailing list and a newsletter. So you can sign up for the newsletter on my website, jennycritchlow.com.
Yeah.
You could go onto the Facebook page, The Annex at Barmore House, and message me from there, and I'll put you on the mailing list. I also do talks, so I do talks for people. So if people want me to come and do a talk on any of those subjects, I'll talk away. And I normally then get, my mailing list is built from talks, so people come and put their name on the mailing list.
Makes sense. Absolutely golden. Thank you very much, Jenny, and we'll catch up soon.
Thank you.
Cheers. Wow, like I said, we go deep in this interview. Now, I really hope you enjoyed as much as I did. And listening back, I still picked up things that I didn't really understand beforehand. So listen to it again to get the full true meaning. Thank you very much, Jenny, for that. You've opened my eyes to a hell of a lot of things. Now, even though the workshops would have been and gone from now when you're listening, check out the website, check out the Facebook page, because there's some coming up for you to attend, and I would seriously recommend it. So thank you very much, Jenny, again, and I'm really happy to have you on the podcast. Now, if you do want to check more interviews like this, subscribe to me on iTunes or pop onto Radio Warwickshire and hear my show each week. Take care, everyone. Have a good one.